Your Bible's up to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. I've been studying through the Old Testament. We're trying to work through some of those things and go a little deeper in our study of what we're going by in study of the narrative. Hebrews chapter 10 kind of gives us an idea of some of the various lessons we can learn. The law having been a shadow of good things to come, not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually make the comers perfect. Talks about the idea of a shadow versus that which is real. We know there a tree will give off a shadow, a car will give off a shadow, a building, a person. Lots of things can give off a shadow. But there's a difference in the shadow and the real thing. The tree versus the shadow that it gives. The building versus the shadow. One is real and one is projected from it. And he uses that imagery with types and shadows. We sometimes refer to them as types and antitypes. You know, these things that come along, people that come along. And then we're able to look later on at something that came from that. Eden, a type of heaven. Canaan, a type of heaven. He mentioned here the blood of bulls and goats, those blood sacrifices in the old law. Yet there was something that came that was real versus just the shadow, the blood of Christ. The temple worship. And think of all the things that could be applied to that concerning the universal church. The most holy place, presence of God. Think about that as compared to the real presence of God, the very throne where we can spend eternity at. Old Testament types and these New Testament antitypes. And the point being from Hebrews, the key word being better. The one that came after was always better. So let's look at one that we studied not very long ago. You'll remember as we were looking through the nation of Israel, you had those incredible prophets that showed up. Elijah showed up. Elijah working miracles had not been seen. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say Elijah was doing things hadn't been seen since the plagues, since Moses and the deliverance from bondage. And you think about who he was a forerunner for. Malachi chapter 4. I will send you Elijah. He said, there's another Elijah coming. I will send you Elijah. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children. And then nothing's added. No new prophets come. There's nothing added to the law. 400 years pass. All of a sudden an angel shows up while a priest is in the very temple doing his daily works. Says, you and your wife's going to have a child. He, John the Baptist, will go before him, whom we ain't got to yet. He shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children. Elijah wasn't just a prophet. Elijah was a shadow. There's somebody coming that's going to be like him, but he's going to do something better. What manner of man was he? And when the king heard about this, there's a guy out in the wilderness. What does he look like, the king said? He's a hairy man with a leather girdle. You remember that? What's he look like? He looks like a mountain man. He looks like he hadn't shaved in a while. Oh, that's Elijah. The king knew who it was just by the description. Remember how John the Baptist was referred to? First of all, he was one of only three people. Lifelong Nazarite vow. What do you think he looked like? He's a hairy man. Raiment of camel's hair, Matthew chapter 3. Leather girdle. They even looked alike. Somewhat dressed alike. Out in the wilderness alike. You remember who their biggest enemy was, so to speak? You remember who was who put Elijah on the chopping block the day after that incredible victory at Mount Carmel? Jezebel, the king's wife. She sent a messenger to Elijah, basically telling him, you know those 850 prophets that are dead? By this time tomorrow, you're going to be with them. You're going to be in the ground with them. You remember who John the Baptist, big enemy was? Herod's wife. Another powerful leader's wife. In Matthew chapter 14, I want his head and I want it on a plate. A lot of similarities between Elijah and John the Baptist, the one who he was prophesied as a shadow of. Elijah, a forerunner of John the Baptist. Okay, we got all that. Who followed Elijah? Here's the point. Who was the one who followed Elijah? It wasn't John the Baptist. John the Baptist was the antitype. John the Baptist was hundreds of years later. Who followed Elijah? Elisha did. So here's the point. Here's what I want us to build off of. If Elijah was the forerunner of John the Baptist, and if Elijah was followed by Elisha, who is it that followed John the Baptist? Who was he the forerunner of? Who was he making the way straight for? He was making the way straight for Christ. That's in Matthew chapter 11. Turn there just so we emphasize it. I think we know that, but it's so clearly taught by Jesus himself. Let's just remove any shadow. Let's remove any doubt. Matthew chapter 11, when Jesus is talking about John the Baptist, it says in verse 10, "This is he of whom it was written, 'Behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare the way before you.'" Jesus talking of John the Baptist, he was coming to prepare the way for somebody. And Jesus was that very one. So here's what I want us to build off of. I don't want us to compare Elijah with John the Baptist. The Bible handled that for us, verse by verse. Gabriel plainly used those verses in Malachi to let Zacharias know, your son is who was being referred to. You're going to name him John. Elijah, a type. John the Baptist, the antitype. One the shadow, one the real. I want us to look at the successors to those two men. The one who immediately followed Elijah was Elisha. The one who John the Baptist was paving the way for was Christ. What I want us to do is, could he be a type? It's not as clearly spoken of. There's no angel that shows up named Gabriel comparing the two. But the Holy Spirit makes a lot of comparisons between them. A lot of similarities between them. So the point we're looking at is, everybody who has studied very well knows that Elijah was a type of John the Baptist. I want us to look at the two men who followed them. Who followed Elijah, who followed John the Baptist, and what do they have in common? We know Elijah is a type of John. Is Elisha a type of Christ? Let's just compare their lives. Let's compare some things that we know about them. If the predecessors was shadow and real, if the predecessors was type and antitype, what about the successors? Elisha and Christ. Let's talk about their beginning of their public work. You remember how some of this we'll refer to, some of it we will actually turn to. Turn to Matthew chapter 3, since we're in Matthew. But while you're turning there, let's remember what Elisha... And if I get them confused, just pardon me. All through the month or so we looked at those two men, I was constantly getting Elijah and Elisha. It's a slip of the tongue sometimes. But we're talking about Elisha today. Do you remember what his first work was? Do you remember the day Elijah was taken? And they went from town to town to town. And Elijah kept trying to get Elisha. You know, God's got something planned for me. You need to stay here. And Elisha basically said, "You have lost your mind. I'm going where you go. I'm going as far as I can go with you." And they went from town to town. They finally come to the Jordan River. Elijah took the cloak, bam, hit the river, and they walk over on dry ground. They were being followed, you remember. Sons of prophets, the ones in what we would call prophet school, they knew something was up too. And from a distance, they are following, watching all of this. And so Elijah and Elisha go across the river. They're all left on the other side, but apparently close enough to still see. So the two men are on the other side of the Jordan, and they're walking and they're talking. And Elijah basically says, "What can I do for you? What can I give you?" He said, "I'd like to have a double portion." He was asking for inheritance. What he was asking for is, "I want to have your powers. I want to do what you do." And Elijah said, "Look, yeah, you've asked something I can't give. That's God's part of the stick." But, and then you know what happens. chariot comes down, that whirlwind comes down, Elijah is taken off. The ones on the other side of the river saw it happen. Elisha, now left alone, he picks up the cloak, walks back to the Jordan River. Bam! Does the same thing Elijah did. And the Jordan does the same thing that it did for Elijah. God parts the river, Elisha walks back over, and all those people saw that. It was witnessed at the Jordan River. God is with this man. The thing Elijah used to could do, Elisha. God has now joined with Elisha. And that was how Elisha's fame began to spread. Matthew chapter 3. Jesus shows up where John is baptizing people. I need you to baptize me. Oh, no. You need to baptize me. This is God's will. This is fulfillment of what He wants. Baptize me. And He did. In verse 17, a low voice from heaven said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." Elisha's stamp of approval, so to speak, publicly, was at the Jordan River. Jesus's, here's God letting it be known, "This is my Son. I'm with Him." And that both Elisha and Jesus getting that confirmation in front of witnesses. And it happened at the very same place. How about that? Not long after that, it seems to be almost immediately, they were both challenged. They leave the river. Do you remember? Word begins to spread. And Elisha comes to it. After he's crossed back over, he comes to this town. And all of a sudden, he heals, might not be the right word. But he fixes bad water. He's now a miracle worker. Word begins to spread, and all of a sudden these kids show up. All right, I say kids, old enough to know better, old enough to make choices. And those kids come up, and it's interesting. You remember what they said? "Go on up, Baldy." Sometimes we might think, hey, the lesson here, don't make fun of bald people. Well, there might be some bald people here who would amen to that. But that's really not the point. What were they asking? What were they wanting? They were challenging Him. What had Elijah just done? Man, he had gone up. And now word is beginning to spread that Elisha is now the miracle worker. He's now the prophet. And now what you got is a challenge. Hey, we know what Elijah could do. We know what he did. Can you do that too? That's what they were asking. Can you go up like he went up? Show us. The point was not, don't make fun of bald people. The point is, you respect those whom God respects. That's my prophet. I am with him, and you treat him as such. And those kids, it didn't turn out good for them, did it? That was, seems to be almost immediately. He comes across. He heals that water. And then he is challenged. Can you do what Elijah can do? How much power do you have exactly? Matthew chapter 4. "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." And then Jesus was led by the Spirit out into the wilderness, and he was tempted by the devil. What was he tempted? Hey, exactly how strong are you? Can you make bread? Oh, you're hungry, aren't you? Can you make bread out of this? How much power you got? Can you throw yourself down and not scratch a thing on your, not scratch a part of you? Can you do that? Exactly how strong are you? How much power do you have? Very same situation. Public knowledge being spread. And then immediate challenges made to that. A couple real quick applications for us before we go on. Not that it fits in with this lesson, but just for ourselves since we're here at this point. Don't be surprised when challenges come. We claim to be children of God, and then we're surprised when the world challenges that. And you, when stumbling blocks end up in our way, don't be surprised when they come. And don't be surprised if they come early. Secondly, another application we could make, however it needs to be applied to us, Elisha did not go up as he was challenged. Jesus did not make stone into bread. Jesus did not cast himself off. Satan was misapplying scripture. Neither of them did what they were challenged to do. Sometimes silly things are thrown in our way. Sometimes somebody's, they're not, it's not interested. It's not a, it's not knowledge that they're seeking. Just trying to tie somebody in a knot. Both of these challenges were basically ignored. But don't be surprised when they come. And don't be surprised when they come early. They began their public work. A lot of commonalities. Immediate challenges. They've got that in common. They were both miracle workers. We talk about Elijah's miracles, and rightfully so. Actually, when we went through the period of Israel, there was a lot more told about Elisha's miracles than there was Jesus, or excuse me, Elijah's. As a matter of fact, it's like the Holy Spirit, in working its way through the kings of Israel, it just took like a 3 or 4 paragraph interval. It's with Elisha, it literally stopped the narrative and just started talking about events in Elisha's life. People he came into contact with, miracles that he did, things that he fixed and helped and corrected. And so I'm going to go through these. Go back to 2 Kings 4. Let's remind ourselves of what some of them were. We're going to go in order in which they come in the chapters. But as you went through that period, probably what you saw was they were not in chronological order. The Holy Spirit gave us some events, but we know from some of the things that were said, kind of out of order, that it's not chronology. But let's just follow them as they came. Jesus, a miracle worker. Elisha, a miracle worker. And it's not just that they're working miracles. Look at what some of them were. Look at this long list. 1 Kings chapter 4. They raised the dead. Both of them raised the dead. Do you remember? There was this widow that became very... I wasn't sure the widow at the time, excuse me. There was this family that became very close to Elisha. And he prophesied of a child being born. And then that son was born. And years passed. And he's now old enough to go out in the fields and help work. And one day he just starts complaining to his dad. Yeah, I just, what's that? My head's killing me. I don't know if the Bible's not clear. I don't know if there was an aneurysm. I don't know if this was some kind of incredibly powerful migraine. We don't know, but it was something. And he got sent back home, go in and rest. Go lay down. By the time the dad got back to the house, he's dead. And they send word to Elisha. And the mother said, you know what? Why did you do this? If he was going to die, why did we get him to begin with? Was this just to pull the rug out from under me? Elisha shows up at the house. In verse 35, he returned. He walked into the house to and fro. He went up and stretched himself upon the child on him. And the child sneezed 7 times and he opened up his eyes. Elisha brought people from the dead. So did Jesus. Do you remember Jairus' daughter? Very similar story. A man comes and finds him. My 12-year-old daughter is on her deathbed. Will you come? By the time they got there, not on her deathbed, she is dead. Jesus brought her back alive right after she died. She's still there in the house, dead. There was another time. There was this widow from Nain, and her son has been dead long enough. There's a funeral procession. They are carrying him, well, I guess we might call their form of a coffin, to the burial site. Jesus raises him from the dead. You remember Lazarus? He wasn't on his deathbed. He wasn't in the coffin. He's in the grave for 4 days. And the point is, it didn't matter where Jesus come across a dead person immediately after, or on the way to the funeral, or 4 days after the funeral. Life and death was not at his beck and call. He had control and power over that. Elisha raised the dead. Elisha fed a lot of people with just a little bit of food. You still in chapter 4? Did you remember that one? There came from... Man, he brought the man of God bread and fruit, 20 loaves of barley and ears of corn. And he said, give to the people that they can eat. So he's got some food there. Hey, go share this with everybody. And the servant said, I'm going to set this in front of 100 people? That's a nice meal there. There's 100 people out there. There's 100 men outside that door. He said to him, you go give it to the people that they may eat. For this is what the Lord said. They will eat and they will have leftovers. Does that sound familiar? When we were studying this, did it scratch an itch? Where Jesus did the same thing and some of the very same statements was made? That's a nice lunch for a little boy, but there's a multitude of people here. As a matter of fact, there were 5,000 men, not counting the women and the kids. That's a nice lunch for a kid, Jesus, but there's a lot of people here. Go do it. And you remember how those 12 collected the leftovers. There was a time where 5,000 was fed. There was a time when 4,000 with the extras. Leftovers every time. Here's an example of that. What you've got is the shadow. There was a pre-runner to that event. Look in chapter 5. Very next event. We meet this man named Naaman. Has leprosy to whatever extent it was. And if you're wondering why he wasn't, you know, quarantined, he's not a Jew. Naaman wasn't a Jew. He wasn't under the law of Moses. But he has a servant that's a Jew. He has a servant who's been taken captive. She knows some things about what it's like in Israel. And she says, you know, there's a man there. I think he can help. He's a miracle worker. He's done some incredible things. And you remember what happened? Naaman goes to his house, and before he's not the most receptive of ears, but he is reasonable. Questions are posed to him. Why would you not? And his leprosy is cured. Did Jesus do that? You remember the time when 10 lepers screaming, because they are ostracized, 10 lepers, he said, go show yourself. He didn't touch them. See, it wasn't even close enough he could have a normal conversation. This is from a distance, whatever the distance would have been. And where's the 9? Do you remember that story? One comes back and falls before him out of gratitude. Where's the others? Look at Second Kings chapter 6. We looked at this event, I think, maybe the Sunday before David Banning got here. My time's gotten away, but we looked at this event. Do you remember when Syria's about to attack, and the king is upset because they keep knowing what's going on, and he thinks there's a spy in the camp. No, there's no spy, verse 12. O King Elisha, the prophet in Israel, he tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedchamber. No, there's no spies here, but there is a prophet in Israel, and he knows what you're thinking. God helps him. He can tell every plan you've got. Whether you shout it from the mountaintop or whisper it in a corner, he knows. Does that remind you of anything in Jesus' life? Do you remember when the paralyzed man was, the roof was taken apart, his friends lower it down, and they talked about Jesus perceiving their thoughts. They knew that when he talked about sins being forgiven, he said, this man blasphemes. Who does he think he is? Jesus knew what they thought. Do you remember when Jesus went to Matthew's house, and it seems to me there's this crowd of Pharisees and leadership out in the street, because they would never be caught dead in that publican's house, but they're outside whispering about it. They're on the outside looking in through a window or through a door or through a patio opening. Why would he do that? Does he not know who they are? Jesus knowing what they thought. When do you go to the doctor? Do you go to the doctor when you're well? Or do you go to your doctor when you're sick? These people are sick. They have a need. And I'm here to help with that need. He knew their thoughts from across the street. Elisha knew their thought. He was a shadow. There was going to be one coming after him that could do it a whole lot better with a whole lot more power and authority behind him. What about walking with blind men? You're still in chapter 6. We did not go into this part of it as we made those applications. And 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever that was. But remember, the Syrian army has surrounded the city. They've surrounded the house. And remember, Elisha's servant is going crazy. He's opened up his eyes. Let him see. Let him see the army of God. You remember that event? We talked about that not long ago. It's kind of interesting. As Gehazi's eyes were being opened to the army of God that surrounded their problem, he had this to take place. Verse 18. When they came down to him, that's talking about the soldiers. When they came down to him, the Syrian soldiers, Elisha prayed to the Lord And he says, smite these people, I pray you, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness, according to the word of Elisha. And Elisha said to them, this is not the way, neither is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek. And he led him to Samaria. What just happened here? Don't get your idea that they just went Ray Charles on you. They didn't just go Helen Keller. They didn't literally lose their sight. They just don't know who they're looking at. They are there to find Elisha. Is no, no, guys. You took a left turn at the wrong tree, buddy. Let me take you there. Let me help you get where you want to go. They have no idea who they're talking with. They walk from one city to the next. They walk from where Elisha is to Samaria, capital of Israel. And he walks them right in to that trap. And they don't know who they're walking with. They don't know who they're talking with. Does that sound familiar? My favorite of all, after the resurrection, for 40 days, Jesus showed himself, remember. My favorite of those showings is in Luke chapter 24. When Jesus joins himself to those two disciples, and they are just in a tizzy. He says, what's the problem? What do you mean, what's the problem? Don't you know what happened here? The one we thought was the Messiah is dead. He's been dead 3 days. And now we're hearing these crazy stories, and we don't know what to believe. And they're walking to a town called Emmaus, and Jesus walks with them. They don't know who he is. They're not blind, literally, but they don't know who he is. Their eyes had been shielded in some way. And it says he took them to the scriptures, and he begins to teach them the Christ. They get to where they're going. They sit down to eat, and bam, all of a sudden the scales are gone. And they know it was Jesus. Poof, he's gone. And they look at each other and say, you know, how did we not know? Didn't our hearts burn within us? We should have known nobody taught like him. Why did we not know? They start berating themselves because they didn't catch on. But Elisha walking with people to a city. They don't have any idea who they're walking with. Jesus walking to a city. They don't have any idea who they're with. It's a shadow. What about the betrayal? 2 Kings chapter 5. Do you remember after that event with Naaman? Naaman was incredibly thankful, as you would imagine. Incurable disease has just been cured. And he wants to show his gratitude. And he had all these bags of money and silver and jewels. And hey, I want you to have this. And Elisha basically says, no. It was freely given. I freely give it. That was the power of God, not me. This happened because of what God did, not because of some training I had. Just be thankful. Go. But Gehazi, the servant, saw all of that. And when the smoke had cleared, he gets on his horse. And he catches up. You know, there's a caravan and there's one. And one's going to move a lot faster than the other. And he caught up with them. Oh, you're not going to believe this. My master changed his mind. He does want the money. That wasn't true at all. Gehazi wanted the money. The servant wanted the money. The disciple of Elisha is the one who wanted the money. And then all of a sudden, when all that came about, as if Elisha didn't know. Hey, where you been? Naaman's leprosy to a Gehazi. Do we even talk about the real of that? That was a shadow of something. What was the real? You had Judas, who already carried the bag, but yet is covetous to continuing to grow, and sells him out. A friend, a close associate, betraying him for money. What about the tears that were shed? Turn to 2 Kings chapter 8. Did you catch that one? As we were studying through this. 2 Kings chapter 8, to set the stage as you're turning there. Again, Syria, who is a big, big thorn to Israel. Syria has a king named Ben-Hadad. Ben-Hadad is sick. And Elisha is known everywhere by now, not just in Israel. So we kind of get all these moving parts together. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, is sick. He sends a servant to Elisha to find out if he's going to be okay. And Elisha tells the servant, whose name is Hazael, yeah, your king's going to be fine. Your king's going to get better. This isn't going to kill him. but he's going to die anyway. This is not a death-taking sickness here, but he's going to die. And that just kind of, that ended the question. That's all Hosea was there to find out. And then I'm guessing it probably got quiet. In verse 11, it said that he settled his countenance steadfastly until he was ashamed. And the man of God wept. He's told Hosea what he came to hear. And he just looks at him and he looks at him. And to the point it seems to be that it got uncomfortable. He just starts bawling. Hey, what's the problem? What's going on? He says, I know what you're going to do. You are going to become the next king of Syria. And you're going to hurt my people. You're going to kill women. You're going to kill children. You're going to hurt my people. And Hazael, being the moral man that he was, when he found out he's going to be the next king, he says, let's get that ball rolling. And he goes back home to Ben-Hadad. Am I going to be okay? Yeah. This is not a sickness unto death. And then he takes out that wet rag and just smothers him there on the bed. If I'm going to be the next king, let's not just wait till next month. Let's let that happen right now. And you've got Elisha crying over what he knows is going to happen to people he loves. That's the shadow. You remember what the real was? Matthew 23. Jesus, yeah, I love these people. I just wish they would come to me. I'll just take them back in my arms. But they won't. And he knows what's going to happen. He knows people of that very generation was going to be there when there's a lot of crying. In AD 70, when those walls fell, and when that temple was destroyed, and when Rome took them to dust, Jesus crying over people he loved. What about what we covered not very long ago, Elisha's death, chapter 13. Elisha died and was buried. And then at some point after that, verse 20. Elisha died, they buried him. The bands of the Moabites invaded the land at the coming of the year. In other words, once winter is over and things dry up a little bit, and all the invasion takes place. It came to pass, as they were burying a man, so somebody else died, and they were going to put him in the same cave, the same tomb, so to speak. As they were burying a man, they spied a band of men, and they cast him into the sepulchre with Elisha. So did you catch what happened there? Probably what would have happened is, they take him in, and they find a spot, and they would have laid him, but that's not what happened. While they were taking him in, all of a sudden, they saw these raiders coming in. It got serious real quick. So they don't go in and start looking and gingerly lay somebody down. They take him in and they hung him and they just throw him so that they can go defend themselves. And when they throw him, his arm, his leg, something, they throw one dead body and it hits another dead body. It hits another pile of bones. And those pile of bones was Elisha's. And that guy gets up and walks out of the tomb. We ever seen that shadow? Do we ever see something better than that? Jesus walked out of his own tomb. And you look at this. Oh, what a bunch of coincidences. No. Is that a bunch of coincidences? It's a shadow of something better that was going to come. A better prophet. A better miracle worker. Jesus, Elisha feeding multitudes. Jesus offering bread of life and living water. You've got Elisha curing spiritual leprosy or physical ailment, this leprosy that there was no physical cure for. Jesus curing a spiritual disease, sin, of which there is no medicinal cure for. You've got a resurrection at Elisha's tomb. But whoever that guy was, we don't even have his name. Whoever that guy was, he died again at some point. There was another time, another group of friends carried him into another tomb and laid him down and he stayed there. Jesus was the real, not a shadow. And he came out and never to go back into another one. That's the thing about types and antitypes. One's always better than the other. But as we went through Elisha, we spent a lot of time, spent many, many weeks looking at him and some of his work. We're just trying to compare and see what we can learn from that to apply it to ourselves. Get your psalm books out. So think about what Jesus was. Think about what Jesus did. Think about what Jesus is to us. As we learn more and more about him. And what this is, this whole thing we're doing with, we're not just studying the Old Testament. That's not the purpose of this. The purpose is we're seeing the fulfillment of promises. And we're working toward the fulfillment of that seed promise. Jesus was that fulfillment. And there's a lot of people coming before him. Joseph, Moses, Elisha, Jeremiah, etc., etc. There's a lot of groundwork that was laid prior to that. And we are getting to see it in our study. So let's appreciate it. Let's learn more about him so we can be better like him. Before we go into our study, if any of this, in any way, it might apply to us. It might affect us. It might want to move us. Like the men on the road to Emmaus, it makes our heart burn within us. Well, let's act on it. Because if anything's hindering your worship, we've still got things to do together. If something's hindering it, fix it before we go any farther. Do it while we stand and sing.